I'm joined on the phone right now with Andrea Schmidt, who is a Montrealer activist currently in Haiti. She joins us from Cité Soleil.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks.
You've been down in Haiti for about the last week and a half or so. Can you give us an idea of some of the work you've been doing there?
Sure. I'm down in Haiti with two other activists and independent writer journalists, Justin Potter and Anthony Fenton, and we all decided that it was important to come down to try to research the role of Canada in this pre-elections period, a year and a half after the coup that took the Denis Lavalas party and President Jean-Bertrand Aristide from power. That the sort of post-coup period is ongoing, and the coup obviously was the result not only of internal disruption, but of international disruption of that sort of democratic process. Now there's a new quote-unquote democratic process going on because the interim government that was put in after the coup could only constitutionally be in power for 90 days. That 90 days has extended by international consensus for much longer than that, about a year and a half. And elections are supposed to take place before a new president is installed by February 7th, which is, again, a constitutionally set date by which the president is supposed to be put into power. So elections are scheduled in Haiti for the first round right now is tentatively set for November 20th, for the first round of presidential elections. We can talk more about elections and election dates later if you want to. But just to give you some context, that's sort of the political context in which we find ourselves. As we arrived, the candidates for president as well as for parliament and for the Senate were being listed, which means that they submitted their signatures and were waiting to find out whether they'd made the list of candidates. So we're here, again, though, not only to look at the elections process itself, but to look at the way the international community, quote-unquote, and particularly the Canadian government, has been involved over the past number of years, and particularly through this elections period, which everybody here agrees is a critical period for the country, how they're involved in constructing the political context and the form of democracy or quasi-democracy that is being implanted and imposed here.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the first days you were in Haiti, you were at a press conference at the Canadian Embassy where Denis Coderre was speaking. This I found very interesting. You'd written a report about that. Coderre, of course, was making a promise on that day for money, for policing around the elections. Can you talk a little bit about that press conference with Coderre, and also maybe a bit more in detail about Canada's involvement in Haiti leading up to these coming presidential elections?
Well, I think first it's important to note that Canada hosted one of the meetings in 2003, one of the international meetings that's chronicled in an article by Actualité writer Michel Bastel, as having sort of set the framework for the coup. And Canada has also in various ways funded the opposition party, or parties, the Group 184, that was the political face of the movement largely of business people, business interests in this country. And it's very interesting in Haiti because civil society here, because of that grouping, has really come to be synonymous with business interests. It's not much broader than that at all. But Canada was supportive of those groups through various funding initiatives, as well as politically. And then in the immediate after coup period, Canadian politicians, including Denis Coderre, including Jean Charest, including Denis Paradis, have all come down to support the interim government. Now, Denis Coderre has been to Haiti apparently 11 times, and when he's here, he meets with people like Mr. Boulos, who is a prominent business leader here, a prominent group 184 member, also a doctor by training. We met with him this week also. When Coderre was here last Tuesday, we had just arrived. It was actually our first event that we attended in Haiti. And he was here to announce more funding, $2.25 million for retired RCMP officers to come supplement the RCMP and other UN police teams who are already here on the ground. I believe there's more than 700 police, UN police, and over 100 RCMP. That funding is in addition to the $17 million that Canada has already channeled through CETA to the elections process. And there's also $3.5 million, I believe, that has already been given out for elections monitoring. So that gives you a sense of the sort of Canadian support and Canadian financial support through CETA that's going to support, in some sense, and create a certain context and perhaps also have a certain control over the upcoming elections. Because, of course, I think the international community, meaning the United States, Canada, the EU, the major funders of the coup and the après-coup period have a very large need for these elections to go well. If they don't go well, those countries will seem like they have failed. There's been a lot said, as Paul Martin told theme, in Haiti, as in other countries right now, when we're talking about intervention, is about, you know, the responsibility to protect. The responsibility to protect almost failed states from potential failure. And I think the entire international community that participated in unseating what was an elected government is now really needing to put back an elected government in place that can rule here to make things look like not quite a failure.
Now, we're speaking on a very significant day for the Haitian people. Today, September the 30th, marking the 14th year anniversary since the first time that Aristide was overthrown in a coup led by the U.S. And it's also been traditionally a day for demonstrations in Haiti. Today, there were demonstrations throughout the world, including a small one here in Montreal. There weren't any demonstrations in Haiti today. Maybe you could explain why that's the case and the prevailing atmosphere where you are in Cité Soleil today.
As you say, this is the first year in 14 years since that first coup the second coup, but the first in this half of last century. So the first time since the 1991 coup, when the U.S. unseated Aristide and took him to Washington, that there have not been demonstrations by the Lavalas party, by Fanny Lavalas, and the Lavalas movement to commemorate that coup. I think this is caused by several things. I think the first thing is that last year there were demonstrations in Bel Air, and MINUSTA, the UN forces here, opened fire on a crowd, and people were shot and killed and injured. That obviously puts a sort of chill effect on peaceful demonstrations. I think a second thing that's going on is that the PNH, or the National Police of Haiti, have put out a decree. They did it earlier this month in September, saying that no demonstrations were allowed for the entire month until October 2nd. The excuse they used was that they were busy accompanying children going back to school, returning to school. But, you know, the fact remains that that's relatively transparent as an excuse. It was fairly clearly avoided public demonstrations by the Lavaras movement and by the New Lavaras around these very sensitive dates. So both now the anniversary of the coup, and I think the third thing is that the Fanny Lavalas party has suffered considerable persecution over the past year and a half. And one of the things we've been doing has been to try to document some of that and to meet with some of the people, some of the activists in that party, to get their sense of what's gone on over the past year. But there's been a considerable, I think, weakening of power and cohesiveness in that party here, and it's quite evident. And it was quite evident this morning in Cité Soleil what some of that repression looks like. You know, when you have people showing you their houses that have been shot by MINUSTAH, the repression is quite clear. The repression that's been going on in Lavalas sort of bases is quite clear when you go into a place like Cité Soleil and people are showing you the bullets in the walls, in the school walls, in the house walls, where MINUSTAH, the UN forces, fired on July 6th when they went in their language to get rid of Dred Wilmé, a chimère and a gang leader here, but for Lavalas people, he was not a gang leader or a chimère, but a chimère being a derogatory term used to animalize and to demonize young, poor men here. He was a political leader in some sense, and was a community leader. So that sort of repression, that sort of violence is still very evident, and the scars are quite evident, not only on the buildings, but in the fear that people have that of MINUSTAH patrols and of their distaste for those patrols going through their community.
Despite this prevailing police repression that you're describing, do you get a sense in talking to people there that there's still a will to continue to demonstrate for the democratic rights of Haitian people?
Well, you know, that's a complicated question because your question comes in several parts. I think that people here are very, very persistent. And as somebody we spoke with the other day who is no longer a member of the Lavalas party but was very active at the beginning of the Lavalas movement, he said, you know, the Haitian people have a PhD in resistance and we're not going to give up very easily as we continue to strive for democracy in this country. Now, not pro-Lavalas people here are necessarily pro-return of Aristide here. There's a number of, you know, other issues that complicate things, especially leading up to an election. I think, in general, Lavalas activists believe that Père Gérard Jean Just, who was widely believed to be and understood to be the Lavalas candidate for the upcoming elections, should be released from jail, whereas he's being detained as a political prisoner. So that's an important thing to consider. You know, the elections are taking place in a context where the form of repression is not only police repression, not only all sorts of masked violence, and not only MINUSTAH forces occupying certain areas, but it is also one in which there are a considerable number of political prisoners being held, and held without particularly speedy process, and in some cases, no due process at all. So all to say that that I think the sense I'm getting from people is that, yes, they will continue to fight for democracy. They will continue to fight for sovereignty in this country as well. But there's not necessarily a unified strategy about how that is to be done right now. And I think that we need to be really realistic in understanding that because I think that that also is one of the logical consequences of the sort of repression coming not only from inside a country, but also, you know, this is a social movement that began in the 80s that has persisted, has suffered, at two coup d'etats, but also the result of a repression directed at it from outside, from the international community, from the United States, who's consistently intervened in democratic processes here, from Canada, from the EU. And so if, you know, there's not the sort of united, vivacious movement that we would hope for, and that I'm sure Haitians would hope for and do hope for, that Lavalas and even ex-Lavalas people hope for, that doesn't mean that it's over. It doesn't mean that there won't be another movement like that in the future. But at this point, it is undergoing a very difficult moment, and there is not necessarily a unified strategy for imagining how that true democracy, not just these elections taking place sort of at the behest of the international community and with, you know, under conditions of both repression and incarceration, in which true democracy can really implant itself.
Mm-hmm. That's actually about all the time we have for today. So we've been on the phone with Andrea Schmidt, currently in Cité Soleil in Haiti. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Andrea.
Thanks, Aaron.